Clarity International, publisher of the book, Get Clarity, The Lights On Guide to Manifesting Success in Life and Work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
I'm here with Stephen G. Post, the author of Pure Unlimited Love. And Stephen, you're about to give us your definition of love. What do you mean by love in your experience?
I wrote a dissertation at the University of Chicago on the concept of love. And I was working with psychologists like Csikszentmihalyi and world religious scholars like Mircea Eliade, who wrote the great book on shamanism. And this is the definition that I grew into and feel comfortable with and have used consistently since then. When the well-being and security of another is as real or meaningful to you as your own, and sometimes more so, you love that person. Now, there's no ancient language involved in that definition, but if you just think about it, it works. If you're looking over the crib of a newborn, if you're having a cup of coffee with an old friend who's had a hard time, if someone's been put aside by their lifelong partner, whatever it might be, it works. Because the well-being and security of another is as real. It's not that your own well-being and security are not real. In fact, they are the test case. You have to love yourself to love others. But that's the deal. So for me, I get up in the morning, and I've done this my whole adult life, really, and I meditate for about an hour, and I dress rehearse the day. I think about all the people I'm going to see. Most of them I know. I keep an old book with names and schedule in it. I don't do it on my computer. And I realize that some people, for example, are having a hard time with a really important creative project. So when I see them, my expression of love is to help them with some ideas. Somebody else might need compassion because they've been suffering, and maybe their son has gone back into an addiction. So they need a lot of compassion. And some people need loyalty because everything seems to be evaporating. Everything stable in their life seems to be evaporating. So they need to know that I'll be there with them and for them regardless. So love, loyalty, compassion, forgiveness. Some people make big medical mistakes and they're wanting to think about leaving the field. And I might say to them, as I did one day to a young physician, those who make no mistakes make nothing. And I was quoting Martin Luther King in that. And so I'm always thinking about sometimes mirth. I do a lot of mirth because I feel as though mirth is always, if it's tasteful and uplifting, it's always an expression of love.
So mirth is in humor and
Yeah. It helps people get away from their difficulties and just open up in a millisecond into a whole new emotional reality. It's very, very powerful. So laughter and mirth, not laughing at or at the expense of anybody, but in ways that bring people peace. So the other day I was in the hallway, there were some folks who were kind of struggling a little bit, and they happened to be talking about Halloween. And I said, by the way, do you know where ghosts buy their houses? On dead-end streets. And these people just cracked up, and all the anxiety disappeared, you know. And I love to do that. It's not because, I'm a great comedian. I'm not, but it's just because I really appreciate the way in which we have evolved as a species to reverse our emotional state through laughter. It's the great way to forget about all the things that are bothering you and to restart and reconnect in a more positive way.
Boy, we need a lot of humor these days. And going back to your definition of love, it also reminds me of giving kindness toward the well-being of others. And the word kindness is something more easily understood on some level than when we say love your neighbor. But be kind to your neighbor is maybe easier to understand and manifest.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for that. In fact, the first chapter of this book, May You Heal With Kindness. May You Heal With Kindness. That's actually the second chapter. And I use kindness a lot because it's something that people have an easier time with. I don't come into this building and use the word love very much, but I utilize its manifestations. And one of its manifestations is kindness and those other things I'm talking about. So actually, on any given day, we can operate out of a place of love, but it will manifest as needed and as the people around us feel that it's needed. We have to be attentive. We have to listen. We have to notice where they're at. How can we be of benefit to them? And that's really the level where love needs to come into the world. Otherwise, it's more of an abstraction.
And with that, there are two kinds of benefits. Of course, it's beneficial to the person we're being kind towards. The act of kindness is beneficial for another. But you also write, and there's a lot of research that you mention in your work, that it's beneficial for our own personal health. In fact, there was a line that just popped out at me, and I thought, boy, if people were motivated by anything else, they'd be motivated that kindness reduces susceptibility to Alzheimer's.
Well, it does. Yeah.
Tell us.
That's the chapter called May You Give and Glow. Every chapter is a may statement. May you give and glow. May you heal with kindness. May you follow your callings. You know, I've been studying the benefits of kind giving, and not just routinized external giving that sometimes can be forced, but, you know, giving from the heart. And that's very important. So the studies indicate when people are in that state of emotional well-being, and they give, they have much more significant benefits than otherwise. But although just giving, even if you don't feel that much kindness, if you're just sort of doing it because it's required in service-based high school learning, about a third of these kids take to this like a duck to water, and it's very easy for them. They're really emotionally involved, and they enjoy it. About a third of these kids are hesitant. They're kind of reticent at start. But then if they have a good role model and if they're inspired, they'll come around sooner than later, and they do. But then there's another third that really never catch on until maybe a little later in life. Maybe they have some kind of a midlife crisis or whatever. So people do vary a bit. But kindness is so important. And giving with kindness, may you give with kindness, that's all there for a reason.
That really takes us into another one of your paths, is raising kind children.
Yes.
And as one of the seven paths, and I was blown away by that. So tell us why this is important.
Well, just, you know, observing the lives of the people around me. When your kids are kind and nurturing and helpful to others, guaranteed they're going to be more successful. But that's not the reason for it. The reason for it is because they're just going to be happier and they will be healthier. A lot of people talk about raising kind kids. We actually, the Institute, funded a number of major international projects on how to raise kind children, how to do that. That's the million-dollar question. That's what we should all be studying, because, you know, if we can learn as parents to raise kind children, and there are some real wonderful techniques, toolkits, then we're better off. We're not nervous about our kids so much. They will probably do better in school. They do better in school because they have something to study for that's beyond themselves. So raise kind children, raise kind kids is an important thing to try to do.
Okay.
If you're going to have kids. Not everybody has kids. That's okay.
I was curious. I know that you write about, or at least you document, the experience, children's experiences of love by Sean Keener, mm-hmm. where he delved into the experience of love. And it really reminds me that basically children, if they haven't been damaged in some way, right. young children, you know, under the age of 8 years old, just have this automatic response to others in a very kind way. There was one that mm-hmm. you mentioned in your writing where Keener asks Jimmy, age six, you know, what does love mean? And he said, and this just blew my socks off, when he was asked about sitting with an old man who was crying after having lost his wife of many years, his mother asked him, what did he say to the neighbor? And the boy says, oh, nothing. I just helped him cry.
Yes.
He had this natural affinity, not to interfere with the process, not to be scared about this man crying, but just knowing to sit with him was what was required.
Yeah. So this is such an important point. You know, the great French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote Emile, and his argument was that kids are naturally empathic. And we, as parents, as cultures, we push all the wrong buttons and we get them off course. Now, you know, the English, the Anglo-American tradition more or less assumes, as did Freud, that kids are just nasty swashbucklers from the time they're born, and it's all uphill, and all you can do is try to put a thin veneer over a seething, boiling cauldron. But that's been disproven. So one of the things the Institute funded, we actually funded some studies that were done at the Yale Child Studies Institute, and there they've really shown that even from age 6 months, these young kids through toddlerhood and so forth are actually remarkably empathic. They may not be able to operationalize their empathy in acts of altruism and giving because that's more complicated, but they feel the suffering of others. And it's a beautiful thing. And it tells us that we should not think of our nature as being so dastardly, that there's an inherent goodness within us. And the task of raising kind children is to do the things that will enliven that inherent capacity.
I remember years ago reading an article about twins that were born. They were premature, and one was thriving really well, and the other in another bed was not thriving. And there was a nurse who, just against all protocol in that hospital, insisted on putting them both together in the incubator that they were, you know, sitting in. And when she did that, the one twin reached out to the other and put their hand on their heart, and the second twin started to thrive.
Yes.
And yes, you concur with that kind of...
I've seen similar kinds of things. This is why even in the neonatal intensive care unit, if you have a newborn who you can hardly even see underneath all the technology, they have the mothers come in and sit on a rocking chair and hold that baby with all the wiring and the beeping and the buzzing and the lights, and rock and hum to it, because that connectivity is always there and needs to be nurtured. And if you have that in a nurturing way, it benefits you over the course of your lifetime. It's not that you're completely determined, by those early experiences. I don't want to say that it's too simplistic, but certainly what you experience and how you experience love, that's why the first paragraph of that chapter, "May you heal with kindness," is so important. I mean, we come into this world, and all we know from a loving parent or a loving, in this case, sibling, is love, and that's what we're born for.
Exactly. One of the other paths that you have, which I think is really, really important, is the gift of nature. And in our industrialized society, we don't have to leave our home to fetch water or chop wood or bathe in natural waters or anything. What would you say about the importance of nature in our lives and what it contributes?
Well, that is the chapter, "May you cherish the gift of nature." I am very big on that because I think that many people, especially younger people, are so caught up in technology. And by the way, Steve Jobs didn't let his daughter have an iPhone until she went to college. Just FYI.
Says a lot.
It says a lot. We would sit on the floor and we would read the autobiography of a yogi together. Just FYI. I mean, but nature is so important. And there is such a thing now. It's not formally part of psychiatric literature, but it's called nature deficit disorder. And there are many, many people who are writing books about that. And I think it's going to be recognized as a real problem in our world. The reason why people are so anxious often, depressed, is because they are so separated from the beauty, from the awe, from the wonder. I mean, a lot of our feelings, our positive emotional states of awe and wonder, come from nature. I ride a ferry from Port Jefferson over to Bridgeport at least every couple of weeks because I get claustrophobic on this island. And I love to look out at the waves. I love to see the coast. It makes a big difference for me. And sometimes I'll bring my computer, my laptop, and I'll do some of my best writing out there because I get inspired. So we need nature. And it's very clear. If you go to meditate, I talk about knowing the one mind. If you go to the local meditational center in Port Jefferson, that's near Stony Brook, they'll always have, the wind chimes and all these kinds of naturalistic structures with waters flowing. There's something about knowing the one mind and being close to nature that have always gone together.
Exactly. I remember Monterey Hospital has this huge, koi pond, and for those patients that can have the facility, they roll their beds out to be next to that pond. I also was really moved by, as you were growing up, you would go to chapel, and in this chapel at St. Paul's, there was a prayer that was so beautiful. I've typed it out if I can read that prayer, because for you to have grown up with this prayer is just extraordinary. And it's called Prayer for This World. And it's, "Oh God, we thank you for this universe, our great home, for its vastness and richness, and for the diversity of life of which we are a part. We praise you for the arching sky and the blessed winds, for the driving clouds and the constellations on high. We praise you for the seas and the running water, for the everlasting hills, for the trees, for the grass under our feet. We thank you for our senses by which we see the splendor of the morning, hear the jubilant songs of love, and smell the breath of spring. Grant us, we pray, a heart wide open to all this joy and beauty, and save our souls from being so steeped in care or so darkened by passion that we pass heedless and unseen when even the thorn bush by the wayside is aflame with the glory of God. Yeah. And you grew up with that poem.
I still have that little red prayer book in my office at home.
And it really helped to inform you about nature right away, but also you've done a lot of sailing in your life, and
yeah,
that's another point of really enjoying nature and its naturalness without motors or just a sail in the wind.
So it's so important.
It's very, very important. And I know that one of the last paths that you talk about in the path, the spirit, may you have the spirit of freedom. And you included freedom. I'd love for you to talk about why you included freedom. And I know that it's not only external freedom, but you're talking about internal freedom as well.
Yeah, may you honor the spirit of freedom. Some people think of freedom in the same sense that you might think of an animal escaping a leash, biting through a leash. I don't. Because, by the way, if you give that animal a good bit of food, it will not want to get away at all. It will be very happy with its food. This is what Dostoevsky wrote about in The Grand Inquisitor. So I'm a big believer and the idea that freedom is a gift of the spirit, or the gift of the one mind. That's why earlier I mentioned that in Hinduism, the three qualities of the divine are love, creativity, and freedom. So that's so much a part of who we are. And the world around us is always trying to inflict itself and in many ways make us unfree. So we have to look within to find the source of our freedom. And when we can feel that oneness with the one mind, then we can be free and we can resist these pressures. So I love that chapter because I just think freedom is so important to the human soul, the human spirit, and it's completely misunderstood. Honor the spirit of freedom. To honor the spirit of freedom is to use freedom consistent with the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Be using your imagination and asking yourself, how can I use my freedom to contribute meaningfully to the lives of others? And fortunately, I'm free in that sense every day. When I come to this job, I've never lost my sense of freedom at work.
You know, in that freedom, it just reminds me, and you said about the three attributes, love, creativity, and freedom. Creativity, that what is the gift of creativity, and what is your experience? How do you advise people to tap into that creative source within?
Well, you do have to experiment. That's one of the things that I did as a youth, you know, volunteer. Find things that somehow resonate with you. We have a lot of volunteers at this hospital, and a lot of them come from the high schools, and even, you know, they may come from any place, but what they're doing is they're describing what they want to do, where they might want to do it, and they find their creativity through choice and through autonomy. And that's a key feature. I was fortunate enough when I was at St. Paul's to find myself when I was tutoring those French Canadian kids, and that really shaped my life, and it still does.
So you really found through that volunteer, and I know that you mentioned throughout the book volunteering and how. If you wonder what direction you want to go, yeah, you can think about, okay, what's lighting you up, and yes, where can you volunteer your energies and let that guide you forward? Am I getting that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, people, you know, I've written a lot of books about the health benefits of volunteering and giving. One of the major benefits, just in terms of your own path in life, is that you have a chance of finding yourself. I'll tell you, and I'm not exaggerating, three quarters of the medical students I've met at U of Chicago, Ann Arbor, Case Western for 20 years here at Stony Brook, 20 years almost now, I've been at this a long time, so many of them had some experience volunteering as caregivers. Maybe it was a family member who had what I call deep forgetfulness. It could have been a lot of different things, but they found meaning in volunteering, and that's why they performed well. That's why they did the things they did. They're some of the most unselfish people. The stereotype that medical students are just out for themselves is wrong. They're all going into debt, and they're not getting paid much. If you're in primary care, you know, you might as well be driving a taxi, honestly. So they're doing it because of their love of an activity that they found meaningful, oftentimes very early in life, through volunteering.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. What a wonderful help that you're giving us to encourage us to volunteer.
But you got to stick with it. That's one thing I have to say.
Stick with it.
May you follow your calling.
So I want to thank you so much, Stephen, for being with us today and sharing with us compassionate care and how we can tap into pure, unlimited love, which is the title of your book, Pure Unlimited Love, Science and the Seven Paths to Inner Peace. And for people to know more about your work, they can go to the website unlimitedloveinstitute.org, or they can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3849.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
Hi, this is Sukyun Lee, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
An adventure is coming. Fun Drive 2025 is just around the corner. Your support is important so we can continue to rise higher and reach further to bring you the local and community radio that you love.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.